When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. I'm your host, retired NYPD Sergeant Bill Cannon, a 27-year veteran of the NYPD. You know, folks, as this case with, of course, little Madeline Soto, horrendous, we're learning more and more horrific things as this case goes on. Of course, in the middle of this thumbnail that you're looking at on the screen is this monster, Stephon Stearns. And we look at this investigation, and we can see those of us that have done this type of work, we know what a great job the Kissimmee police did with this case, because we now see the results of the investigation. However, they were thinking on the spot at the time and the places and all of the information that they had to vet to see if it was in fact true. There's so many people who have all these online talking heads. Oh, that's deceptive. This deceptive. Okay. You're right. It's deceptive. Now let's prove it's deceptive. How are we going to prove it's deceptive? Well, we're going to find the treasure trove of information was inside Stephon Stearns' cell phone. All right. Then once they discovered that, now we got to start matching up his lies with truths, and they start dissecting that from the very beginning. And we all remembered all the different types of interviews. We remember the TV interview that he and Jennifer Soto was on, and of course all of us geniuses out there, and myself included, look how deceptive, they're all lying, this is a lie, look at this, is crazy. Okay, very good, we can all read body language. But now let's find the evidence that'll convict this monster. Let's call him what he is, right? So what do? They get an in-depth interview with him. Let the person lie. That is the credo of a great investigator. Let the person talk. Let them supply the rope that is going to be used to hang them. Let Stephon Stearns keep lying. And as he's lying, you know certain truths, the investigator. And a female investigator, I think she did a fantastic job in letting him talk. Let Stephon Stearns keep talking, because we know that he's lying. And then as he tells these lies, we get them down. We get these on paper. We get them recorded. Now we confront him with his lies. And then, of course, what was unexpected was all these images on his cell phone. And it was beautiful, as we said before we even knew it for a fact, was that the detective got what was a consent search. And now we have documentation of that. She asked him if it would be okay to download the contents of his phone. And he was heard on audio saying, yes, that's okay. You know, we're going to have to keep your phone for 24 hours. That's okay. And why did he give permission? Because he thought he factory reset his phone. There was nothing on his phone that was going to implicate him in doing any wrongdoing. But guess what, dopey? You didn't erase all the things on your phone. And what they found was enough to put you in prison for the rest of your life. And then, of course, that led to the murder first degree charge. So we're going to present to you today some new evidence that we hadn't heard of before. And when you hear it, it gets a little bit, gets very upsetting, you know, to see where this went, where this led to, and it led to the murder of a little girl, 13-year-old girl. Let's face it, she was a little girl, 13 years old, a little girl that was forced to grow up much faster than she ever should have, right? 13 years old. And then when we look at the players in this case, I have lots of questions, and I'm not going to ask them right now. I'm going to ask them later on. But folks, hang on to your seats. Hang on to your hat, your wig, your toupee. Hang on to your service dog, your wife, your kids, whatever keeps you calm, because you're about to enter true crime from a police perspective. You're about to enter the off-the-cuff zone, the police off-the-cuff zone. There has to be some common sense.
Yes, sir. They have the car stopped at 10th and Grant.
We still don't know who pulled the trigger.
You know, who better to join me at 8 o'clock in the morning? I checked to make sure he wasn't serving 8 o'clock mass. But we we have retired NYPD sergeant, professor at Albertus Magnus College in Connecticut, law degree, all-around calm guy. And he's up early in the morning, and he volunteered to come on the show when I asked him. Welcome to the show, Professor Mike Geary. Mike, welcome.
Hey, Billy, welcome. Good morning, everybody. Grab your coffee, sit back, and enjoy the show.
This isn't Coffee with Cannon. This is Police Off the Cuff, but that's okay. You can raise the coffee cup.
Coffee with Mike.
So, Mike, these new the new revelations that we're finding out, disturbing, right? But at least I think that for the audience and for myself and for you, to learn how this investigation proceeded and the mindset of the investigators and the methodical prodding along to find the evidence to put this monster in prison, or as we know right now, to get a conviction on this guy for a death penalty eligible case. Your thoughts?
Billy, it was a great investigation from the time that the uniformed officer went to that, was it a real estate agency, wherever where Jennifer and Stefan were when they called that evening and they got the picture. We saw the body cam images of that. It was fantastic from the very start. I'm sure that the officer himself may have had some questions about their story, that sort of thing, but he wouldn't reveal that at the very beginning. I remember talking to many, many people who seemed very suspicious. And you've done that before, you and Phil, and you get kind of like a feeling about people and you can spot lies. You don't confront them right away. You let them talk. As you said, you just let them talk. You make your notes. From the very beginning, there may have been some suspicion. It didn't take long whatsoever to focus in on the fact that these two may have been involved and that therefore there wasn't an abduction because once they started going back over their stories, you get them together, they're talking, you get them apart. And as you know, get them apart, you and Phil know, they start changing their story a little bit. And then they went over all the cell phone information, license plate readers, you know, GPS on their phone. You know, when you start getting back the phone records, where their phone was as they're traveling around, they focused very quickly on this guy. They had him and Jennifer in their sights, probably, I would imagine, from within, that was like 8 o'clock that night, I think it was, when she finally made the report. I bet you by midnight, they knew what they were doing, and they probably had them in their sights, and they just closed the net very slowly, very methodical, very organized, and what they did was they just kept closing the net slowly but surely, and they bagged them. And that one female detective who said, hey, you know, we got to take a look at your phone. Do you mind for 24 hours? And very calmly, almost matter of fact, you know, not a big deal. Hey, we're just going to need, mind if we look at your phone? And he said, yes. Boom. That was it. So people should be proud of the police. They did an A1 fabulous job.
As they continue to do, you know, from the chat, Cordy G, was he hiding the scratches on his left hand? Cordy G, you know something? That is such, and I'm glad you brought it up, very powerful evidence now, because that shows that there was a struggle, that little Madeline. And we, according to Vinnie Politan from Court TV, and I didn't see any documentation of it from the prosecutor or from the medical examiner's office, that Madeline's cause of death was strangulation. And as I said, that's being reported by a broadcast station, Vinnie Politan, but it makes sense that he now has scratches on his hand, apparently a cut about 3 inches long, because she fought for her life. And this dirtbag, you know, and I wonder how, when they noticed that, did they forensically swab it for DNA, for Madeline's DNA, to further show that it was her DNA on his, if in fact they were able to recover any DNA from his wound. But yes, very, 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 very powerful evidence, you know. And it's, as we learn more things, I'm just like more and more horrified at this case. But again, I appreciate the outstanding investigation that law enforcement has done. I want to play this from WESH TV, and it'll give you a quick little update on some of the things that we learned.
Detailing the abuse and murder of 13-year-old Madeline Soto were released today. The nearly 900-page document goes over interviews with Soto's mother and her mother's boyfriend, Stefan Stearns. He's the man accused of raping and killing the little girl. West 2's Luana Munoz is here. Luana, you spent most of the day going through these documents. A lot of information in there.
Yeah, a lot of that information. We already knew some of these disturbing facts about this case, but this particular document paints a slightly greater picture of the level of abuse that Madeline was subjected to, where Stefan Stearns was the day that she disappeared, and how Madeline's body had been discovered. During the interview, detectives were asking Stearns where he went the day that Madeline disappeared. And what he was telling them just wasn't consistent with where his car had been seen on surveillance footage, and it didn't add up with his Google Drive locations on his phone. Detectives found images of Madeline in Stearns' phone of her being severely sexually abused, sometimes even when she was asleep, and it was evident that the abuse was happening in her own home. Stearns had been saying that he dropped Madeline off at school at around 8:30 that morning. But investigators had video showing him discarding a tire and several items that they later found were Madeline's in a trash compactor of his apartment. That was at 7:30 that morning. Detectives believe that Madeline had already been murdered. She was seen on those surveillance videos with her, quote, head visible, tilted on her left shoulder, and her mouth was open. She was belted into the seat. At around 9:40 that morning, Stearns' car was seen on camera going into the parking garage of a business on South Jongyeong Parkway. The document says, quote, the male then walked to the front passenger side of the vehicle, opened the door, then proceeded to carry what appeared to be a limp female body to the trunk of that vehicle. The document's also revealing how Madeline's body was found by detectives tucked behind a line of bamboo trees off of Hickory Tree Road in St. Cloud. I did reach out to Kissimmee Police asking if anyone else could potentially be arrested in this case, but haven't yet heard back. Jesse?
So there is, like, there we have it. That new information that we didn't know prior to this 900-page report coming out, that he went up into this parking garage of this Holiday Inn on the top floor, pulls over into a parking space, calmly gets out of the car, goes to the passenger side of the car. I mean, first of all, when you think of it, Mike, doesn't this dope know that there's video everywhere? I mean, this guy is beyond dopey. You know, he's like, he's a mess. He's an absolute mess. 37-year-old child, this guy is, really, you know, doesn't work, lives with his parents. It's just a total loser, right? And,
you know, yeah.
So gets out of his car, takes the limp body of a 13-year-old girl, picks her up, throws her in his trunk. And that's at, he leaves that garage at 9:44 hours. Question.
Jewelry can say many things on your wedding day. As a wedding band, it can say, "This is a forever symbol of our forever love." As a gift to your wedding party, it can say, "Thanks for standing up there with us." Blue Nile can help you find the piece that says it all and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
Where's he going now? Where's he going, Mike?
Billy, you know, you've got this 944 security footage. You know, in the days before 9/11, in the days before the Boston Marathon bombing, maybe you would not have seen as much video, maybe at the entrance or the exit or garage. But now it's on all levels. It's on public buildings. It's on private buildings. It's on traffic lights. You see the use for traffic advisories in the morning for rush hour. It's everywhere. So what he's thinking is he's going to go up there, and it's in a corner. It's a quiet corner, probably in the parking garage. It's very quiet. Parks in the corner. Nobody's going to see me. I'm all by myself. Thankfully, he's not that bright. And unfortunately, we do see him putting the body of Madeline into the trunk of the car. That's really sad. And the big question is, you and I discussed it before we went to air today, is what was he doing between then and approximately 1:30, I think it is, about 1:30 in the afternoon, about 4 hours later, when it appears that he was on Old Hickory Road and pulled over to the side of the road, and a witness called the police and said they saw him with a tire iron, outside of his vehicle. And it was about a couple of hundred feet from where Madeline's body was. You know, where was he? What was he doing? Was he just sitting there freaking out somewhere? But he had 4 hours to try to figure out what to do with poor Madeline's body. And he decides to discard her on the side of the road, you know, 100 feet behind some bamboo trees and cover it up with some like branches and stuff. I'd like to know where he was for those 4 hours. We might never know, but I would like to know what was happening during those 4 hours.
You know, Mike, in this document that the 900 something pages, I have a little excerpt from it. On March 1st is when the Orange County Sheriff's Office violent crimes detective Leonard Jones was tasked with assisting in this investigation. He received a briefing and he goes out to Destination Parkway and John Young Parkway to canvass for evidence. During that time, Jones responded to the Holiday Inn Vacations located at 9271 South John Young Parkway in Orlando, Florida. Anyway, what I'm getting to is he's going up into the parking garage, or he's going to collect video from this location. Now, we just played that video from the TV station, but according to surveillance footage, Jones discovered that approximately 0940 hours, the target vehicle, Stearns' Lincoln, I'm not going to read the whole description, with hits his vehicle with the Florida tag, turned into the above business property on Embassy Avenue, then proceeded to the parking garage. At approximately 0941 hours, the vehicle arrived on the top level of the parking garage, then backed into a parking space. At approximately 0942, a fair-skinned male wearing what appeared to be a dark hat, reddish shirt, and tan pants exited the vehicle from the driver's seat, then walked to the back of the vehicle and opened the trunk. So I actually had it out of sequence. He goes to the trunk first. The male then walked to the front passenger side of the vehicle, opened the door, then proceeded to carry what appeared to be a limp female body to the trunk of the vehicle. At approximately 0944 hours, the same male subject entered the driver's seat of the same vehicle, then drove away. The vehicle was then seen exiting the parkway garage from the ground level, then leaving the business property onto Emissary Avenue. Detective Jones then collected the surveillance footage as well as a signed business record certification from the people at the Holiday Inn and entered it into evidence at the Orange County Sheriff's Office. That is, I mean, when we hear that, it's unbelievable. Like, the evidence, the sequence, and, you know, we've said a million times on this show, and when I try to put on my professor hat and say, the letters TPO to every cop means so much, because almost every single report you write starts out at the TPO, and it stands for time, place, occurrence. And time, as I said a million times, is one of the most important things in investigation, because it is how you catch someone in a lie, because a person can't be in two places at once. And a person starts tap dancing about the time when they realize they're caught in a lie, or they realize they can't have done what they said they did in the time that they lied about. So time, the time signature, is always so important. The place. Well, you may ask, how was this detective, directed to this Holiday Inn? Did he just figure that out himself? Or probably not. They had the phone. They had the GPS. They perhaps had his car. So at some point, they pinpointed him going into that Holiday Inn. Still an outstanding find. They find this video that is invaluable to this investigation. And let Stefan Stearns keep lying, because we have video showing him at, oh, it was at 0944 hours. Well, that's when he pulls out of the Holiday Inn. But 0941, taking Madeline's body out of the passenger seat and throwing her in the trunk like some kind of piece of luggage or something, right? And we know at that point, well, we know much earlier, she was dead. So this is really powerful information, powerful evidence that they have in this case. And we're going to go over more, Mike.
Yeah, Billy, the fact that they let him during the investigation in the beginning, when they were talking to him before he, you know, became subject number one, when they were still gathering as much information as they could. And he was telling the female detective this, detective that. There was a male detective who said, wait a minute. Oh, by the way, your car was seen going in the opposite direction. You know, and then, he started tap dancing. Oh, I had to go back. I had to get my clicker for the security gate, things like that. Once they start doing that, and you see he's covering his tracks, backtracking, trying to make his excuse now match with what they're telling him. And the good thing is, every time that there's that inconsistency between what he said he did and where he said he was, and then you know you have the GPS on the phone, which is wonderful, but nothing beats video to a jury because that's gives a much more tactile sense when they're watching. He's saying he's 5 miles away at 0940 in the morning, and here they have security video timestamped 0940. He's pulling into a garage, and we see him taking what appears to be a limp female body and putting it in the trunk of the car. That is outstanding, and it just tightens the noose. But yeah, let him talk. And then he can't corroborate it. You can't corroborate it. But what you're showing is totally contradictory to what he says. It's fantastic. And that's the kind of thing that you want, especially that film footage. You want that in front of a jury because they actually see it rather than look at a piece of paper which has information on it about the movements of a phone. You've got the actual, you actually see him do it. It's fantastic. So kudos to that detective to get that video evidence. Fantastic work.
Well, you know, Mike, one of the things, and I hope people realize, the police have to trod and proceed very methodically. Because when you got a suspect like this, who you almost know, this guy, he's the guy that did it, right? All through the investigation, they must proceed very carefully. Because at any point, excuse me, he could say, I think I need an attorney. And once he does that, the interview's over, right?
Yeah.
So the female detective in this case, and I'm going to play a little bit of it because I think it deserves recognition. She does a great job because she's very subtle. It's almost like, yeah, you know, she's being really nice. You know, you mind if we take a look at your phone? You mind if I download the contents of it? I mean, when you think of it, the only reason this fool allowed that is because he thought the phone, there was no Google Drive information. He thought the whole thing was gone. He factory reset it. I got these cops. They'll never figure this out, you know? Yeah, sure. No problem. No problem. Oh, my daddy might call me, this 37-year-old child, you know? Oh, how's my dad going to call me? Oh, he can call Jennifer's phone, you know? So, but once you know, here he is, and then in these interviews, just lying about everything. And you can't, you know, even when she said, you know, that's really not true. How did we see your car going south at 11? So, I don't know the exact time. And then he's realizing, oh, no. I had to go back and get the clicker, you know, whatever his stupid excuse was, you know. But they methodically dissected his bullshit story. And we go back to time, place of occurrence. And that is what they're trying to thwart, his time stamps. And when it's a beautiful thing when you confront someone with their lies due to their time, and you see and you hear Stefan Stearns in the interview going, you know, I've never been really good at time.
Right.
I'm not into time. Remember Cheech and Chong used to say that? I'm not into time, man. You know, I'm just not into it. You know, that's what he sounded like. It reminded me of Cheech and Chong. Well, man, I'm not really into time. But every time, you know, and then he would always say, oh, I'm not a morning person. And he over-apologized in the interview. Everything, again, signs of deception. But we know they're lying. So all you talking heads, oh, he's lying. Yes, we know that. But we need professionals that can take those lies and use them to build a case. It's easy to sit in your chair as a talking head. He's deceptive. Yeah, exactly. He's being deceptive. We know that. And every cop knows that. But now prove it. And now show and build the case. And now document it. Now confront them with his lies. That's the trick. Kayla Nicole, thank you for the $5 super sticker. Watching every live all the way over here in New Zealand. Only police perspective. I enjoy hearing that out loud. Kayla, thank you. Everyone seems to want to travel to New Zealand these days. Is it because of you, Kayla, or is it because the country is beautiful? Or both? So thank you. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. Ogadi, jail justice for this monster. Yeah, I want to play a little bit of his interview just to get the flavor of this guy.
I know that you already spoke to the other detective, right, about everything that kind of happened today. If you can just kind of go over it with us one more time, the timeline from like when you guys woke up and took her to school and all that.
So we woke up early.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
The plan was that we were going to get McDonald's breakfast on the way, so we made amazingly good time.
You know, how long does it take to get McDonald's? You know what I mean? It's almost like, yes, we called ahead so they could start right. The roast. Dude, you walk in and you order a goddamn cheeseburger or a breakfast or whatever. It takes 2 minutes. It was like exactly. This was this huge ordeal. We were going to go to McDonald's. Like, dude, stop. You can go through the drive-thru. It takes no time at all. But it was like just that. That's also, to me, a huge sign of deception. He's acting like this whole thing, McDonald's thing was like, oh, my God, we called the chef ahead of time. Please prepare two breakfasts, whatever they're called, two quick breakfasts.
Egg McMuffins, right?
Two Egg McMuffins. Please have them and keep them under that light so they stay hot. You know, it's like it was too much made out of this McDonald's nonsense, you know?
I don't mean to interrupt you, okay? Neither of us were here yesterday, so if you can be kind of like specific about like times and stuff like that, okay?
Woke up around 7:15, somewhere around there, which is an early start for us, but we had talked about getting McDonald's breakfast beforehand.
It's so the McDonald's again. Good time.
We did make good time. We got out the door maybe 7:30, 7:45-ish, maybe. Got over to that area.
Folks, we know that he's seen on video throwing Madeline's backpack and her laptop into the dumpster at 7:35. So he just lied. He just lied about the time. And again, trying to teach you guys time. So some excellent detectives do a video canvas of the location and they see Dopey here dumping the backpack and the laptop into the dumpster in the complex at 7:35. And he just said we left at 7:45-ish. And we're going to go to McDonald's. I called ahead. Oh, I didn't call ahead because I left my phone. And Madeline left her phone. I mean, come on. All of this is unbelievable.
She was asleep in the car most of the time, just snoozing until we got there. We got to McDonald's. We're close to McDonald's. I said, you still want it? I wasn't interested in the McDonald's anymore, so we continued on. And she wanted to be dropped off a little down the ways from the school. She's got this phase that she's been into lately where she's very particular about what car she's seen getting out of in front of the school. She prefers her mom's car, but my cars are, I guess, kind of hoopties. I get it. It's an image thing. But
you know, I'm told I was confronted by one of the people in the chat. I'm told that that is a thing with kids that age, that if you don't really have a really cool car, they don't want to be seen getting out of it. I guess maybe my kids are grown now and, you know, they didn't do that to me. But I guess if you don't have a cool car, they don't want to be seen getting out of it. And he's saying, oh, it's an image thing. And he's got some 2010 Lincoln Continental. That's, that's 14 years old. So she didn't want to be seen getting out of that car.
That was sometime probably between 8:20 and 8:40-ish, somewhere in there. It was along the stretch of the road that on the right side that has all the communities on it. Mm-hmm. Before you get to the overpass. You could see the overpass from where it was.
Mm-hmm.
So it was on that side, on that stretch of road. And that's where I dropped her off. She said she was going to go wait for her friends. She was going to go find them and hang out and wait for her friends.
Now, folks, just so you know, he's saying at this time, he's given a time and a location. Now, what's the first thing the investigators are going to do? They're going to go to that location. And they're going to pull video. And when they see he was never there at that time, place, and the location, now they got more to confront this dope with, you know? And now how does he start, as they start confronting him with some of these things, how does he start tap dancing? Well, we hear how he starts tap dancing.
Hey, Bill.
She didn't have a backpack. She, you know, so she's rummaging around in a backpack that she didn't have because he threw it in the dumpster, right? So now the investigators, they're listening. They're getting it down on paper. How many lies can you count? She's rummaging around in her backpack that she didn't have. In fact, she's dead at this point, you know, and these are all the lies he's telling.
Bill, can you, Bill? Bill, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay. Okay. So I thought you were going to play something. Yeah. The thing about all of the lies is that they probably have it not only on audio, or sometimes they'll have it on video, but you never, as you talked about before, you know, you put the person at ease, you let them talk. It's not like an old 1940s Jimmy Cagney, Humphrey Bogart movie where they're the cops are physically throwing somebody up against the wall, confronting them. No, you catch more people with honey than vinegar. You let them talk. You don't alarm them whatsoever at all. You just let them talk. You know, they're there voluntarily. It's not confrontational. This is information only. They can get up and leave anytime they want. They can get for water. They can, whatever they want, they can do, but you just let them talk. And the fact that you cannot corroborate any of the things that he's saying shows that he's being very deceptive. At that point, you got to say, why is he being deceptive? And then you can figure it out. As I tell my students, chronological order of things happening always helps narrow down a suspect in a case. You know, when the person, say, passed away, when they were killed, who could have physically been near them with the means and the motive and that opportunity to do what they did to that person. So you narrow everything down. They knew that she was not probably kidnapped whatsoever, probably within 6 or 8 hours. They knew that, absolutely. It was, so you got to say, okay, it's not that, it's the family. Okay, this isn't the first time we've seen this weird family dysfunction with an unrelated, unmarried male allowed access to a female. We've seen this before. Sadly, this isn't the first case that this kind of thing has ever happened. The cops knew right from the get-go who this guy was, probably by, like I say, a couple of hours after that initial interview. They knew who they were dealing with. And once they got the images, that was it. They put him on ice, and then they finished tying up the bow on the gift, handing it to the Osceola County Sheriff's Prosecutor's Office. But they did a fantastic job. And the fact that you cannot corroborate like one thing that he said shows that he was tap dancing the entire time. There was not one bit of actual testimony that could be from him that could be corroborated by police, by surveillance video, or by eyewitnesses. Nothing, nothing at all.
You know, folks, sometimes I think when we talk in copisms that we should provide a glossary or something. For some of the things. We don't literally mean when we say he's tap dancing that he's tap dancing. That's sort of cop speak for he's lying. And right. But I find it to be, you know, a good term, or, you know, singing like a parakeet. You know, we use terms right. like that, but that's just sort of New York City copisms. Folks, this is Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. If you like real crime, true crime from a police perspective, you're in the right place. And if you're not subscribed, go on our YouTube, hit the subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, hit the like button, share us with your friends and your family. If you want to contribute to us financially, we have a Patreon with four different levels, and we have a YouTube channel membership with five different levels that, you know, I can't believe how fast and how much it has grown in the past month. And it's all because of you guys, our moderators, Kim Alliston, just Carol Grayston. Just the job that they're doing is incredible, and just 24/7 promoting the hell out of Police Off the Cuff Real Crime Stories, and we appreciate it so much. I want to play this little video here, just give a little flavor of actually what's going on.
13-year-old Madeline Soto, her mom's boyfriend, Stefan Stearns, is facing the death penalty.
Now, new court documents reveal the evidence prosecutors plan to use against Stearns. News 6 investigator Mike DeForest has been poring through hundreds of pages of court records. And Mike, there is a lot of video evidence in this case.
Video surprising in this. Police believe that Stefan Stearns murdered the 13-year-old at her Kissimmee apartment. Investigators say surveillance videos show Stearns leaving the apartment with Madeline Soto's body and then driving to the area of St. Cloud where she was later found.
My daughter was dropped off close to school this morning.
Jennifer Soto told detectives the last time she saw her daughter, Madeline, was the night before the 13-year-old vanished. Jennifer Soto says she instructed the teen to go to bed in the same room as Jennifer's boyfriend, Stefan Stearns. The next morning at 7:35 a.m., surveillance cameras at the Venetian Bay Village Apartments captured video of Stearns discarding something in the trash compactor, which investigators believe was Madeline's backpack and school laptop. The video also showed a female wearing a green sweater in the front passenger seat of Stearns' car, completely slumped over with her mouth ajar. At 7:50 a.m., surveillance video shows Stearns' car leave the apartment complex. At 8:19 a.m., it returns and then leaves again at 8:31. Each time, a body believed to be the teen can be seen in the car with her head visible, tilted on her left shoulder. Stefan Stearns told detectives he dropped Madeline off at Hunters Creek Middle School at 8:40 a.m., but investigators say a license plate reader captured Stearns' car miles away from the school at that time. At 9:40 a.m., surveillance cameras at an office building on John Young Parkway captured Stearns' vehicle entering the top floor of a parking garage. A man then opened the passenger door of the car and proceeded to carry what appeared to be a limp female body to the trunk of the vehicle. Using license plate readers and surveillance video, investigators say they could see Stearns' car traveling east towards St. Cloud and Old Hickory Tree Road. That's where investigators later found Madeline Soto's body lying face down between some bamboo trees and covered in debris. Police say they found images on Stearns' cell phone showing him sex.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
actually molesting the teen. Last week, prosecutors announced they would be seeking the death penalty against Stearns. Stearns has pleaded not guilty.
So as this case proceeds, and all of this evidence is just incredible, and we see, we were frustrated as this case was going on. We were just not privy to what the investigators were finding out because they kept it close to the vest. But now as it comes out and we hear and see the methodical nature of this investigation, it's even more upsetting to hear this stuff. And, you know, even when I say upsetting, look, I've investigated hundreds of murders. I've been to hundreds of crime scenes. I'm not going to say thousands. It's hundreds. And, you know, if it's upsetting, you know, to the true crime community, it should be upsetting to everyone about what happened to this little girl. And getting to what one of the things that is bothering me so much is I cannot understand why Jennifer Soto has not been charged yet. And to me, that's disturbing. And the only thing I can figure out, Mike, is that the district attorney wants her as a witness.
Yeah, Billy, we've talked about this. You, me, Phil, we've talked about this and, you know, going back and forth. Normally I would think as a prosecutor, I'd want to charge her and I'd want some serious charges of conspiracy to commit murder after the fact. And I would want all the, at least that, hanging over her head so I can make sure I get her in that witness box at the trial. However, maybe she is actually cooperating so much because, you know, she has an attorney. And so maybe they're cooperating so much. The attorney is assured the police that she's going to testify, you know, anytime you want her, 7 days a week, she's available. Please do not arrest her. It could be something like that. But as a prosecutor, I myself would want to have her arrested. But that's what it could be. Other than that, I can't think of a reason why she would not be charged with even just allowing the SA to occur, knowing that she was neglectful by, you know, allowing the sleeping accommodations to occur over a long period of time. So I'm a little puzzled by it. Maybe she's just a fabulous witness and she's so eager, but I don't care. As a district attorney, I would want the charges on her. So I'm not sure where the district attorney is on this. That's a puzzle. Maybe we'll find out in the future, next couple of weeks, next couple of months. But it is very odd. And if anybody in the true crime community is puzzled by it, you know, you're in good company because we are puzzled by it too.
100%. Let me play this here.
Shed light on how law enforcement was able to find the body of 13-year-old Madeline Soto.
Soto went missing in February, found 5 days later in a wooded area of Osceola County. West Shoe's Haley Crumble Home went through 900 pages of newly released documents detailing how law enforcement found her. Haley?
So with camera footage and eagle-eyed witnesses, it helped law enforcement narrow in on certain areas. I spoke with a witness who talked to police about spotting the car belonging to the man accused of killing Madeline Soto in Osceola County. That man didn't want to speak on camera with me. He just said he wants to see justice for Madeline.
We did discover what appears to be a body.
Back in March, the body of 13-year-old Madeline Soto was found in a wooded area near Hickory Tree Road in St. Cloud, 5 days after she was reported missing.
Okay. Did she ever go to school, though?
No, we called school.
Newly released documents shed some light on how law enforcement zeroed in on the area. The documents include a report from a crime analyst supervisor tasked with identifying areas of interest to search based on tips received and video footage gathered. It says they were contacted by a man on March 1st who saw a news conference and wanted to report a possible sighting of the car belonging to Stephen Stearns, the man now accused of killing Madeline. The man said he saw the car on February 26th, the day Madeline was reported missing, pulled off of Hickory Tree Road around 1:30. He told law enforcement he saw a person with a tire iron in his hand outside of the car. The day the witness talked to law enforcement, he had actually taken photos of the spot where he saw the car. He also showed them the same spot on a map. Law enforcement was able to get video from a street near Hickory Tree Road and found a possible match to Stern's car traveling on Hickory Tree just before 2 o'clock. Law enforcement went to the area. They spotted locked gates on the east and west sides of the road. After the property owner unlocked them, it was only a few minutes of walking around before they noticed a pair of blue jeans and ultimately Madeline's body. Stearns is facing charges of first-degree murder for which the state intends to seek the death penalty if he is convicted.
So, excellent report. It sort of gives us, you know, backs up everything we've just been saying. And guys, just so you know, I mean, I'm just, video and the surveillance and the witnesses, they don't just come into the station house. They don't just volunteer. They detectives have to go out and get it and figure out where to look. So, I mean, it sounds simple, but it's not all that simple because once the case and the investigation's put together, wow, yeah, it sounds pretty simple, but it's never simple, you know? And even finding that that outstanding video from the Holiday Inn, that was great. They found first saw his car on the street and then pull in there and they followed it and they wound up getting tremendous video that's going to be used in that trial. Mike.
Billy, yeah, all that technology from the cell phone, GPS and cell phone, cell towers, pinging off cell towers. You've got the license plate readers, you know, other basic surveillance cameras on different streets. That's fantastic. But what I was thinking about when we were looking at that last bit of video was the fact that a regular, you know, Joe or Jane Doe just happened to see this car because they said, oh, wait a minute. I saw a news report on that. They put two and two together and they called the police. They took pictures. They let the police know exactly where they were. The police corroborated that, the location, because on Old Hickory Road, they went and they got some other surveillance video showing that Stearns' car was there right around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That was fantastic because the quicker that you can recover Madeline's body, the more evidence that you can preserve and bring into the medical examiner's office, the more evidence you'll have to present a trial against Stephon Stern. So just the quick thinking, eyeballs of a witness that said, wait a second, I saw something weird the other day, you know, yeah. And it all clicked for them. Good work by the public too on this case. That was really important to recover her body as fast as possible.
Absolutely. Courtney 614 from the chat. Do you all think that maybe he threatened her or was grooming her as well, talking about Jen? Did he give her some of his sleeping meds or something, not sticking up for her, just brainstorming? Courtney, your guess is as good as ours. There was some weird relationship between them where what mother would allow a 37-year-old man to sleep in the same bed as her 13-year-old girl? And that's documented in interviews with her. And even the police that took those interviews had to hide their shock when she told them that. You know, how is that okay? And if Madeline was alive and that was discovered by law enforcement, Jennifer Soto would be arrested. And so would Stephon Stearns just for that charge in itself, for abuse. So how she just so cavalierly said that is beyond me. And there was some very bizarre relationship between Jennifer Soto and Stephon Stearns. And of course, now Madeline Soto, who wound up suffering a great deal in regards to this dysfunctional relationship between Jennifer Soto and Stephon Stearns, who you see up on this thumbnail right here. I want to read something right now, and this is when the body of Madeline Soto was found. Captain Mingioni and I entered the property on the west side of Hickory Tree Road. We walked to the north for a few minutes near round hay bales covered in plastic. Then we went to the left south side of the gate where there was a long line of tall bamboo trees. Captain Mingione noticed just a few feet into the bamboo tree line what appeared to be blue jeans. As we got closer, we noticed what appeared to be a body. The top half of the body was covered by a green-colored hooded sweatshirt, and the bottom half was covered with blue jeans. The body was laying on the left side in somewhat of a fetal position. It appeared that the body was covered by pieces of hay or dry grass. Based on my training and experience, it was apparent this was a human body. I did not see any signs of life. I could clearly see flies covering the body. Captain Mingio and I walked out of the gate and used crime scene tape to secure the scene. Deputy Chris Johnson responded to assist, and a crime log was started. Kissimmee Police Department responded to the scene along with forensics, and the investigation was turned over to them. That is the report of when her body was found. One thing that glaringly slapped me right in the face just there is that if you remember when Jennifer was interviewed, she said that Madeline was wearing black shorts. And in this report, she was obviously wearing blue jeans. So what does that tell us? Tells us Jennifer never saw her leave, never saw what she was wearing for school, right? And you watch that, and Stefan Stearns did another tap dance. He was changing what she was wearing as the interview went on. But I totally recall that Jennifer Soto said she was wearing black shorts, and she said it emphatically as if that was correct. Mike?
Yeah, Billy, one of the people in the chat earlier came noticed that too, Connie G. She remembered the interview with the initial interview where the cop was getting the description. And I think Stefan said that she was wearing, dark colored pants. I don't think he said a color, dark colored pants. And she immediately corrected him and said, no, she's wearing black shorts. And then here she is. She's found with the jeans on. Yeah, it shows that she had no clue whatsoever about what her daughter was wearing that morning. So she actually never had eyeballs on her daughter that morning. She later, of course, admitted that. But at the time, she was actually correcting him rather quickly, which was surprising, as if she was actually telling him, no, hun, yeah, she's wearing something else. You know, like a father might not be paying much attention, but the mother knows exactly what her daughter's wearing. So she corrected him rather quickly right out of the gate. So that was interesting. So you picked up on it, and one of our sharp-eyed listeners did too, and that's fantastic.
One of our sharp-eyed chatters. you chatters are sharp-eyed. I want to play a little bit of the body cam video because this is really hard to watch now.
What's the name of the thing, Light?
Madeline Soto, age 13. I'm trying to get a clothing description now. What was she last seen wearing?
Green hoodie.
Green hoodie.
White Crocs.
White Crocs.
Either blue or black pants.
I think black shorts.
Black shorts.
There it is. Black shorts. Stefan Stearns was actually right. Black or blue jeans. And then Jennifer chimes in. Let's listen to it again.
Green hoodie.
Green hoodie.
White Crocs.
White Crocs.
Either blue or black pants.
I think black shorts.
Black shorts?
Yeah.
Black shorts? Okay. Black shorts. All right. Do you know she has like friends in the area?
She does, but she doesn't know where they live.
She doesn't know where they live. Okay.
I asked all of them.
Okay. Is this like, does she like have any places that you guys know that she'll usually be at? Any friends' house? Any places that like she likes to hang out?
Not typically.
No.
Not typically?
No.
Okay. Just give me 1 second. Let me see if I get some.
Thank you.
No problem. And what school she goes to?
Hunters Creek Middle School.
Hunters Creek Middle? All right, cool. 125.
You know, as we watch this, guys, and again, I'm not trying to be critical of talking heads online, but we can all see they're being deceptive. Look at Stefan Stearns with his arms folded in front of his body. Right. He's lying. He's a liar. Right. And Jennifer Soto's behavior is, to me, I mean, she always just seems like she's off the wall, you know, and maybe that is appropriate behavior for her, but she's obviously lying. She just got caught in a lie saying that Madeline was wearing black shorts. She obviously didn't see her. When was the last time? She never saw her leave. Never saw her leave to go to school. Never saw her. You know, and that the question I have, the big question that begs everyone wants to know, where was Madeline murdered? And I surmised or guesstimated that it occurred in their condo. It happened between midnight and the morning hours sometime. And the other question is then how, if that's true, how did he get Madeline's body from the condo into his car without being seen? How did that happen? Mike.
Billy, yeah, we've talked this over and looking at the timeline. Obviously, Jennifer had no idea what her daughter was wearing when she was left the house, either in Stefan's arms or actually, walking out on her own as an alive person somewhere about midnight to 7:35 in the morning. So she was probably killed, I would imagine, in the bedroom. And I guess strangulation. I figure that's the quietest thing. You got to think like a perp. What's the way to do it? Or brutal blunt force trauma. But yeah, Jennifer was zonked out. She was exhausted. She was asleep. She wasn't paying attention. Maybe she didn't even want to know. She told the police that when she said "we" a couple of times, she was adopting the term "we" because she thought she heard Jennifer in the kitchen. Maybe she was in her bedroom and she heard noises, and she'd said, "Oh, that must be them leaving," but somewhere between those early morning hours and 7:35, she was killed in the condo, quietly as possible. Jen either put a pillow over her ears and didn't want to hear it, or she may have had some sort of recognition that this had gone on. We don't know. The dynamics in that family were really strange, really very troubling. And so then when he took her out, it may have been just sheer luck that where he parked that morning, where he had parked the car maybe the night before, and he went out to the car, that it just was not in an area covered by a security camera. It may have just been sheer luck that we do not see him leaving the condo with her in, with carrying her and putting her in the car. We see video all over the place of him and license plate readers, but that one critical piece of information we don't have. And being that it was 7:30 in the morning, maybe you would like to think that maybe there would be someone who was going to work that morning who may have just looked over and seen him leave, because everybody's got their morning routine. But I wish I had that piece of evidence. I wish we did, but we don't. But it could be just the fact that he got lucky and there was no surveillance video camera at that location by pure luck.
Mike, I and many people in the chat are very disturbed by the fact that Jennifer Soto is not being charged right now. Right. And we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. And someone mentioned in the chat, could she have been offered a proffer? And that's a possibility, that she's agreed to be a cooperating witness. But to me, she should be charged. I mean, she is so complicit in this. It's screaming as to why she's not being arrested. I just cannot understand it. And the only thing I can figure out is that the district attorney wants an easier case. I think the district attorney has tremendous evidence against Stefan Stearns. And again, we all know you never know what a jury is going to do. Sometimes juries want to see videotape of the murder before they convict. It's like that crazy. So maybe the district attorney is hedging his bets and saying, no, let's use her as a witness. And if she doesn't cooperate, then we'll lock her up. But to me, she caused this. She really is an accomplice to this, Mike.
There's no getting around it, Billy. She allowed this to go on, this abuse to go on for years. And whether she absolutely said permitted it, or she just kind of had a suspicion of it. She did not act as a parent is supposed to act under the law to protect the welfare of their child. That is complete neglect, and it's neglect way past the point of neglect, going into the realm of allowing SA to occur right under their roof, you know, and it's inexcusable. I would imagine that she herself is maybe under some sort of special care, maybe taking medicine, because she just doesn't seem like she's capable of actually being a protective parent in this case. And she may have a lot of troubles herself. No excuse whatsoever, because once you're a parent, you are a parent 24/7. There's no days off, you know, no days off, no pay. You got to do what you got to do to protect your child. That's the one thing that you have to do, is to protect your child. Everything else flows from that. We'll see. It's, you know, obviously the Osceola County prosecutor is, you know, is being very, very careful, and we can be thankful for that. So there's no crazy conspiracy ideas online, but hopefully we'll find out soon, maybe when they release more discovery material to the defense, it will be made public why she is not been charged with the crime. But for those who find it troubling, you're in good hand. You're in good company. I find it troubling too.
Absolutely. From the chat, the real Me Too, Maddie was strangled. Yeah, you know, the real Me Too, we heard that. I don't see any documentation coming out in any reports of that fact. However, I know that Vinnie Politan from Court TV reported that on his show yesterday. KJ, I think it's in the documents that the M took place, the condo. Well, no one's saying, well, look, the condo early on was listed as a crime scene. In fact, there was a search warrant done at the condo. So, yeah, it would make sense. But as I said, the police were never coming forth and saying, oh, she was murdered inside the condo at this time in this place. Emily Parkinson, Court TV reported yesterday that she was strangled. Yes, I was referring to that, Emily. Thank you so much. You guys are all great little reporters, and I didn't mean to say that in a condescending way. I called you little reporters. You're big reporters, and I appreciate all the information. But we have to, like, also vet the information, because sometimes people put stuff out there, and then it turns out, even broadcast stations put stuff out there, it turns out not to be true. And I've seen that a lot of times in my tenure doing this. Cyber Ninja, I like that name. So who got out of his car at the church that morning? No one. That never happened.
Right.
Cyber Ninja. That was a lie. That was a story. No one got out of his car. He was never went there. Doc K from the chat. I, as a mother, would be in full panic attack. Jennifer's too calm. Doc K, you're 100% right. True crime beat. Adults can be groomed. No doubt. We know that. We know that. Yeah. Absolutely. Queen... Real talk, I think Jen is smarter than what everyone thinks. I don't know. That's yet to be seen. I haven't seen the smartness from her. Kimba Jazz, I personally think she was exhausted from work and she slept through it all. Just my thoughts. And he was lucky in that maybe she was quietly killed. Well, Kimba Jazz, one of the things we know now is that based on the wounds that Stefan Stearns had on his hands, that Madeline resisted to whatever form of murder there was. If he tried to strangle her, he had cuts on his hands. So that's a sign of that the victim, who was Madeline in this case, fought back. And hopefully, and I'm sure because the investigators did everything correctly in this case, they forensically processed those wounds, swabbed them for DNA, photographed them, you know, took pictures of them, see if he received any treatment for those wounds. And of course, it may have been once they discovered those wounds, it may have been too late to interview him about those wounds, since he, as soon as his phone came back, as soon as they found the evidence in his phone, he immediately wanted an attorney. So they may have never gotten to where they could question him about that. Mike,
Yeah, Billy, you know, the timing is so important because, you know, when you interview somebody, how you interview them, what information you get out of them, when can you corroborate this information?
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
All takes time. And like you said, in the beginning, they may not have seen a cut on his hand. You know, if he had been dragged into the station house, or he walked into the station house on his own, and he put his hand on a table and you could see a bruise, you'd be asking about that. Absolutely, you'd be asking about it. And he'd try to make up some sort of story about it. I think, didn't he say at one point, I think to one of the detectives, that he's a rookie at changing a flat tire on a car?
Yeah, he did say that. Yeah. I wanted to vomit when I heard that. Like, dude,
come on,
37 years old.
You want to
call your daddy to come and change your flat tire? It's disgusting. This guy is just a loser. Which way, he's a loser, you know?
Yeah. So maybe that was some sort of injury that they had noticed there. But the timing is so critical, because once you actually formally charge him, Miranda is the rule. And then you have to read him Miranda, and he has the absolute right to have an attorney and no more questioning. And so at that point, boom, whatever you've gotten freely given is good. And then after that, you have to go through the attorney. Now, he may cooperate if he thinks, and the attorney thinks that will do him good. Most likely, 99%, if I'm his attorney, I'm telling him to shut up. Don't say a word. We're not going to talk to the police. Don't you dare say another word. You keep your mouth zipped. And therefore, whatever you could have gotten then further from him is lost. But the timing, the sequence of how things happen, that's so critical, because sometimes the police can get information ahead of time and confront them. Sometimes they don't get the information until later, and then they can't confront them. But that any sort of mark on his hand showing some sort of bruising or cut, especially if he's right-handed and it's on his right hand, that may show a contact wound or resistance. Or if he's like, I'm a lefty, if I'm going to attack somebody, as I'm punching them, if they're grabbing my right hand, trying to grab my arm, they may leave embedded cuts in my right forearm. So very interesting, but it's good that they actually notice that there is a injury to his arm, at least one injury to his arm.
Joyce Bautista, he had to kill her in the wee hours of the morning, period. For him being such a big guy, it was easy to carry her and put her in the front seat before anyone woke up. Joyce, I don't doubt that. My question is, how did he do that without being seen, either by a witness or on video? Maybe he knew of where he could pull his car where there was no video, because that's a big question. How was he able to remove the body from the house and put it in his car, in his passenger seat of his car? So, big question there. I agree. You're right. But the million-dollar question is, how did he remove her from the house into his car? CBC from the chat, I've got thousands of trial hours as a stenographer. The proffer could include probation, ankle monitor, a number of other punishments, and not jail time due to psych issues. You know, I know someone put in the chat that Court TV said that they don't need Jennifer. Court TV, Vinnie Politan has never been a cop. He's never been a lawyer. He can go to his panel. But let me tell you something. Every prosecutor does not want to take a chance to lose a case. So they may go extra safety net by wanting someone involved to be a witness and offer that person a deal. And the evidence of that is that she hasn't been arrested yet, you know, and she should be. So the only thing we could surmise from that is that the prosecutor may want, in this death penalty case, he may want to make sure that he's got a slam dunk of a case, Mike.
Yeah, and he wants her to testify. And, you know, you got to remember, detectives, cops, everybody's looking at probable cause. Do you have probable cause to arrest someone? Absolutely. Prosecutor is looking beyond that. They're looking, okay, you've got the suspect. The cops may have probable cause, but I want an extra piece of evidence here. I want an extra piece of evidence there, because they're thinking their standard of proof is not probable cause. It's proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And in this kind of case, when you have a death penalty case, they may want her to be a completely voluntary witness, excuse me, and not a witness that is under threat of criminal charges herself. Maybe she'll be an even more credible witness to the jury. And if she doesn't cooperate, they can always arrest her for the things she's allowed to happen. But I think, as you say, yeah, the prosecutor is just sitting there going back. Remember, this is the penalty of all penalties. This is the highest level that you could play the game. And therefore, you've got one shot at this guy, and you want to have every single witness who's going to be friendly. You do not want to have her as a witness who may shut their mouth on direct, may give you some information that you weren't expecting. You want this person to be completely cooperative, completely on your side, and the jury aware that she has not been arrested and she doesn't have a penalty hanging over her head until after this Stefan's case is over with, because then it shows some sort of leverage being applied. You want this witness without any encumbrances whatsoever, talking to the jury as a mother, as a female, and then allowing the jury to see her without the threat of arrest over her head. Maybe that's where he's at, or the prosecutor's at this time. I'm not sure.
Lisa Ainsley, I would love to know what kind of teenager Jen was. You know, Lisa, she was a teenager for about 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
So you should ask what kind of type of 12-year-old she was, because she had just turned 13. So I'm not saying that to be sarcastic, but she didn't have a chance to be a teenager.
She didn't. She didn't.
Texas Patty, I think Jen needs a complete psychological examination. She's not hitting on all cylinders. I would agree. I think she's got some issues. That's what we say these days. Someone has issues. You know, that's the kind way of saying it. Ashlyn Harmon, just joining. I hope I didn't miss too much. You missed a lot. why would Jen want to disown Maddie at 18? Well, it's showing a sign of dysfunctional relationship in that family. Something was going on that we don't know about. Also, if you guys recall, in Madeline Soto's diary, she indicated that she wanted to run away and go live in the woods. That is a sign of potential abuse and potential bad things happening at home. Connie from the chat, she did not even work full-time. I work long hours as a single parent. However, my son had his own room. No creeps involved in my life either. That there's so many of you guys are heroes out there, single moms that work, take care of your kids, help your kids with their homework, do all the great things that all of us good parents try to do, you know, and not bring, as Connie, as you see, any creeps into your life. Dreamcatcher, any mum, and I know that's an English term, you must be from England, any mum or dad that chooses a sickle pawn over their children should have been infertile from birth. I can't have kids, and this makes me so mad when I hear about things like this. Yeah, I think you're right. Lori Morris, truly Jen lied about seeing her, and she was wearing black shorts, I believe, but found with jeans on. Jen needs to be charged. Yeah, I find this perplexing, to say the least. CW, did the complex have garages like a car park undercover or private garages for each condo? CW, I don't know. I can't answer that. but I know what you're getting at, that perhaps he could have gotten to the garage undercover, and how do we know he didn't have moved the body during the cover of darkness? We don't know that either, you know, but we just know that he was caught leaving the complex, and Madeline was seen in the passenger seat. Mrs. Amir, Queen, real talk, image being 8-year-old and a sicko living in the same house with you. Poor Maddie. Yeah, I agree. Just Helen, the Scottish llama. Vinnie Politan was a prosecutor. Well, then he should know then that every prosecutor wants to hedge his bets, and they will hold on to someone as a witness because there's no guarantee, even when you have the goods, even when you have a great case, that the jury may vote not to convict, especially in a death penalty case. So let me play a little bit of this from Court TV.
A smile, one of her last day on earth. It's her 13th birthday on her own, although she had this on again, off again, live-in boyfriend, now accused murderer, Stephen Stearns, in her life. I want to read a piece of one of the reports where Jen is being interviewed and stating some things, according to investigators. Jen stated that her and Stephen had been dating on and off for approximately 7 years, okay? Jen stated while they were together, they would either all sleep in the same bed, or Madeline would sleep with her when Stephen was not there. When asked if it was normal for Stephen and Madeline to sleep together without her being there, she said, yes. Jen stated if she needed a good night's sleep due to her anxiety, she would ask them, meaning her boyfriend Stephen and her daughter Madeline, to sleep in a different bedroom. And then Stephen stated Madeline always needed human contact when going to sleep. Stephen referred to it as snuggling. Prosecutors have referred to it as sexual abuse. Let's bring in our think tank tonight.
So if that, what you just heard, isn't disturbing from both adults, but mostly from Jennifer Soto, because she's the mom, right? It's disturbing. And as the prosecutor said, no, that's not snuggling. That's called sexual abuse. Mike.
Yeah, the fact that not only did the police suspect this, but she validated it, admitted it, and actually talked about the sleeping arrangements shows that this had gone on for a long time. It had gone on with her approval. She didn't put up a fuss. She didn't kick him out and say, you can't, don't you even touch my daughter. It's been on again, off again for years. And that's the way they slept when they were all together, or one was working and the other two were home. That's what really drives people in the real crime community crazy, is once that admission takes place, you've got probable cause right then and there. Why is she still walking around without handcuffs on? We'll find out, hopefully, in the future, but that is disturbing. And unfortunately, this is probably not a unique situation. And it's very, very disturbing. And to allow this to go on for years, there's no excuse. There's no excuse. This did not go on when she didn't know about it. This went on and she knew about it the entire time.
Yeah, no, very, very disturbing. Let me go back to Court TV.
Florida's law makes you eligible for the death penalty, but the death penalty that they're seeking is not for these charges. This is going to be the first trial. If they get a conviction on this trial, they will use this conviction as one of the aggravating factors in the second case during the penalty phase, if he's convicted of the murder, as a reason, one of the reasons, to send him to death row. So when you piece together these two cases, they are absolutely connected, but they will be separate trials. And the one involving the images, like, there's no defense for it. What is the defense? It doesn't exist. It's the easiest case a prosecutor can try, even though no cases 100%. Stay with us. Up next.
So, yeah, I mean, let me just keep this going here.
What about Madeline's mother, Jen Soto? Will she be a witness or a co-defendant? Our think tank will break it down.
So, yeah, they're asking the same questions that we are perplexed over. Is Madeline Soto going to be brought in as a witness or as a perpetrator? And guess what? They don't know. So right. If you think right. TV knows more than us, go ahead. Listen, you know, right. They don't know. The only one that knows this is the decision of the prosecutor. And the prosecutor may have not totally made his decision. He may be pondering this, thinking, do I need her as a witness? Mike.
Yeah, he's going to take his time. The prosecutor is going to take their time because you've got this horrific SA case against him, rock solid cases. As Vinny said, yeah, this is the best case that you could have as a prosecutor. Again, nothing is 100%, but this is a pretty darn good case against him. It's all electronic. It's not just, you know, questionable witnesses at 3 o'clock in the morning, the kind of witnesses that you and Phil had to deal with on homicides who may have been under the influence of narcotic or alcohol or have extensive criminal histories themselves. No, this is all electronic data, time, place, occurrence, all time stamped right then and there. And so it's smart to do this case and put the death penalty case on the back burner. You do this, you get a conviction. Once you do that, once you get that conviction for the SA, you then use that conviction as one of numerous aggravating factors to seek the death penalty in the second case, which would be the murder case. But luckily for the prosecutor, they can take their time because they have a lot of information on both the SA case and a tremendous amount of information on the murder case. So the prosecutor is in the driver's seat completely with these two cases, and they're going to take their time and they're going to do it right.
Absolutely. I just want to play this because this was very early on in the investigation, and this tells us so much so early. And this was Chief Mena.
Case that we want to share with our community. I wish we were here to tell you that we have found that.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
But we have not found her. Last night, detectives from the Kissimmee Police Department met with Madeline's mother, and they had to tell her the very devastating news that although we have not found Madeline, we are now confident that she is dead. So our efforts will be focused on recovering Madeline. Dozens and dozens of detectives, crime analysts, and specialized team members have been working nonstop and following up on every single lead and every shred of evidence. Our detectives have determined that Madeline was never dropped off on the morning of February 26th near her school. Instead, we believe she was already dead at the time and that Stephen Stearns moved her body in the early morning hours on that day. We have video evidence that shows Stephen Stearns discarding items in a dumpster in that apartment complex in Kissimmee at 7:35 on Monday, February 26th. Detectives later recovered Madeline's backpack and her school-issued laptop from that dumpster. At 8:19, we have evidence that shows Stephen Stearns returning to the complex and Madeline was visible in that vehicle. We believe she was already dead at that time. As a result of that, although the initial missing persons investigation started in Orange County, the Kissimmee Police Department will now be taking over the investigation and will become the lead agency. And of course, the Orange County Sheriff's Office, all of our support personnel will be available and will be still be assisting in this investigation.
So this was very early on in the investigation, yeah, before they had even found Madeline's body. And they knew because of video surveillance. And don't forget, Stephen Stearns left the complex and video showed Madeline in the passenger seat, leaning to the left with her mouth open. And then, for whatever reason, he returned to the complex and Madeline was still in the car. And again, appearing lifeless in the front seat. And then at some point he leaves a second time he leaves the complex. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, we know now that at 9:42 hours, he goes to that Holiday Inn and he goes to the parking lot on the top floor, gets out of the car, opens the trunk, goes to the passenger seat, removes Maddie's body from the passenger seat and throws her in the trunk. So, of course, we didn't know that back then because this investigation has gone a long way since Chief Mena gave that little press conference. From the chat, Lula Morocco, thank you so much for the $10 super sticker. Just so you know, Mike, Lula Morocco is a big fan of Professor Mike Geary.
Thank you.
He says, Mike Geary, the best guest ever. Well, Lou, thank you.
Thank you.
All you guys in the chat, I want to thank everyone for coming here so early because I know many of you live in different time zones and I don't even know what time it is in Great Britain and Australia and South Africa and all the countries that all you guys come from. And I just want to tell you how honored I am to have all you guys in the chat and all you guys supporting the Police Off the Cuff podcast because it's growing because of all you guys. And I want to thank all the new names in the chat too. And I just want to make sure you subscribe. It's free to subscribe. Just hit the subscribe button. And I want to just let everyone know we're going to stay with this case sometime in July. I think for some reason, the 18th is sticking in my mind. I don't for sure, but Stephen Stearns has to appear in court and he's not going to be the punk he was the last few times, refused to appear. They're going to make him appear in court. And it'll be the first time he's ever showed up in court. So we will cover that that court appearance and if there's a press conference after it. But this case is, you know, an extremely sad case. But we felt that we had to give an update, especially with all these new documents out. And we like to give it from our police perspective, from our experience and from our education in law enforcement. And we're thrilled that you guys follow us and like the Police Off the Cuff podcast. Mike, we've been on for about an hour and 26, almost an hour and a half. And I know 8 o'clock in the morning for you, well, for you, it's probably nothing because you get up every day at that hour. But maybe for some of our followers. But I want to thank everyone again. And Mike, your final thoughts.
Final thoughts. I just want to say thank you to everybody who's tuned in. we give it to you straight from the perspective of a uniformed police officer. a detective and a homicide sergeant. You get it here without passion or prejudice. You get great analysis. And so there's no hyperbole. And so we just give it to you straight. So thank you very, very much for tuning in. You're making the channel grow. Phil, Bill, and I appreciate it very much. We appreciate the comments. We appreciate your input. You guys and ladies are really sharp. And that really helps make this a very enjoyable experience, bringing to you these cases, no matter how sad they are. So a deep, heartfelt thank you from New York.
That's great, Mike. Folks, I just want you to know I'm flying to Denver this afternoon to visit my son, So I may not be on the air. I'm going to try to go on the air, but it's going to be tough to go on the air as often as I do when I'm in Denver visiting my son, because that's and it is Father's Day weekend, right? And so, you know, I may get chastised if I try to go on the air. Not by you guys, by some family members. I won't mention who. But anyway, so I will try to come to you either with Coffee with Cannon or try to update on one of these cases. But again, thank you so much for tuning in today. Have a great day, and God bless everyone.
Thank you. One episode, just ain't enough.